Well, hi again, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. I'm Peter Schwartz. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. Happy holidays to everyone, and hope everyone listening is staying safe during these times. It is game on for the 2021 NHL season, although there won't be a 20 part of it. A 56-game season is going to start on January 13th, and on the line with us to talk about it is a senior reporter for NHL Network and also the host of NHL Now on NHL Network. I used to spend so much time with this guy in press boxes all over the metropolitan area, and it's been way too long since I last talked to him. He's EJ Raddick. EJ, Peter Schwartz, how are you?
I'm good, Peter. It has been too long, and they were some fun days being at all the games and being busier. Hopefully we can get back to that at some point in the very near future.
You know, it's funny. Before we get started on the season, I was thinking about this the other day because, we used to sit near each other a lot of times in all the press boxes. And when a bunch of the radio reporters and I, when we get together and reminisce about, the old days, so to speak, covering hockey, sure enough, the one thing that always pops up is how cold it was and how dark it was in the old Halo in the Meadowlands when we would cover Devils games. And I know there were many a nights that you and I were yucking it up in the press box. And, I think about it now. Can you remember how cold and how dark it was up there?
Yeah, that was a distant place for sure. The old Meadowlands, for people who don't know, is they built that building and then they forgot to add a press box.
Basically. Yeah.
So after it was built, they put in a press box in the lower bowl, which was really in the best seats. It's kind of hard to imagine.
Yeah.
That they would sacrifice those seats and what the cost of those seats would be to have a press box there, which I believe was about four or five rows of seats. But when you add the desks and everything, it took out probably, what would have been 10 or 12 rows of seats for the public. And then the remaining media would be up in this, what they call the Halo, which was at the very top of the building. And it was kind of tricky to even get up there to begin with. You had to take the one little elevator up there. And you're right, it was cold and dark, and you had to look over the side of this huge ring to look down to the arena. I was proud to say, Peter, that by the end of my time in that building, I had graduated to the lower press box. Of course, as soon as that happened, they closed the arena and moved to Newark. So memories, and they're cold and they're dark memories, but they're also fond memories because of a lot of good people in there like yourself.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And so hopefully some fond memories coming up for the 2021 NHL season. And look, I think any way you slice it, having a hockey season is great. And it was great that the NHL was able to come back in the middle of the pandemic and have the playoffs in the bubble in both Toronto and Edmonton and, be able to award the Stanley Cup to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And, as soon as Gary Bettman gave out the Stanley Cup to Tampa Bay, everyone immediately wondered, would they be able to have a 2021 NHL season? How is the pandemic going to affect things? And sure enough, the plan is now to start the season on January 13th. Your thoughts on what the NHL and the NHLPA announced the other day?
Well, I guess it's fitting to start on Connor McDavid's birthday, which happens to be January the 13th. So I guess there's some, there's some degree of irony there. But, it's exciting for hockey fans. It's exciting for those of us in the business to be able to have an opportunity to have a season in this really tremendously different time, something unique in our lifetimes. And, the fact that they were able to go through and have the return to play and finish the season and award the Stanley Cup is a real credit to the NHL and the NHLPA and everybody involved with the franchises as well. So that was something that was really quite an undertaking. And then to get to work and try to figure out how this is going to work, and this is going to be like we've seen in baseball and in football, and now what we're going to see in the NBA with these teams playing in their buildings for the most part, and no fans in most of them, although the Arizona Coyotes made an announcement that they will be having limited fans at their right from the start in January. We'll see how that plays out for them. But it's exciting, it's interesting, but I have to tell you, Peter, I feel like it's a day-to-day world we live in these days.
Yeah.
cruise into this pandemic, and we make plans, and we hope we're able to get through and accomplish those plans. And the league and the players were able to do that with the bubbles and the return to play in August and September. We will see if they're able to begin this regular season in a much different circumstances with teams playing in their building starting on January the 13th.
Yeah, and I have a newfound respect for the NHL players. Not that I didn't respect them before, but when you look at what they were able to accomplish in the bubble, and also the NBA players too, EJ, because they went down to the bubble in Walt Disney World, and both the NBA and the NHL had no COVID cases whatsoever once they got into the bubble. And that leads me to feel like even though they're not going to be in a bubble, both leagues even, right now, the NHL players, I mean, they want to play. They are dedicated to playing. And I feel personally, and listen, you're as close to it as anybody that covers the sport. I mean, these guys want to play, and these guys are going to do the right thing. I'm sure there's going to be a case here and there. There could be a game rescheduled here and there. But I feel confident based on what we saw in the bubble over the summer and in the fall that both the NHL and the NBA can get through the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope. And, you know, I just feel like there is so much uncertainty. And, you know, the world takes all these different twists and turns every day, Peter, as you know.
Yeah.
So, especially these days. So, my hope is that they can do it. It is going to be quite a different situation than the bubble. I mean, they will be tested quite a bit, I would imagine, as all part of this. But the reality is they will no longer be in a bubble. And although they'll be taking all kinds of safety precautions to keep these guys negative and keep them, you know, away from getting the virus and having outbreaks within their group, I just think it's hard to imagine that it's not going to happen at some point to someone within the 31 NHL teams. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm sure, again, that they will go through as much of a safety procedure as possible for these guys. But, you know, it will be just like it was for baseball, just like it has been for the NFL. There will be some challenges. And I think the league and the Players Association, they've looked, you know, they're fortunate, Peter, because, you know, they've been able to see what happened in baseball and see what's happened in the NFL and college sports. And every day is an opportunity to learn something about how this is playing out in our society. So I think that the league, led by the Commissioner Gary Bettman, the Players Association, led by their chief Donald Fehr, and of the clubs, I think they're all trying to learn and do what's best within their community settings to make this thing go well. I think, you know, I'm like you, I'm optimistic. I think we'll get all the way through to the end, but I think it's very much a day-to-day circumstance, and we'll just have to see how things play out over the next several weeks, getting to January the 13th, and then once we start, how things go from there.
And as the vaccine is starting to roll out, there's already been a couple of them, and you know, some high-profile people, particularly some politicians, have taken the vaccine already. And I know I read somewhere the other day that the NHL doesn't want to jump the line and get everybody, you know, vaccinated too. But I'm just curious because I know there's still a lot of skepticism from a lot of people in North America about both of the vaccines that are available right now. Do you think there could be a premier NHL player or two that takes the vaccine to get that public trust? Because really, the quicker everybody gets vaccinated, the quicker we get back to normal and people can start going to hockey games again.
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to say what public policy and what governmental policy will be in regard to those type of things. As you mentioned, you know, some political figures have taken it to kind of amp up the public trust that the vaccine is safe and will be effective. I guess time will tell. The scientists have done a tremendous amount of work in a short period of time to get to this stage. I'm a big believer in science, so I like to follow the science.
Right.
And, so I guess we will see. It's hard for me to say whether or not, you know, in Canada, whether, you know, the governmental authorities there decide to say, hey, let's have Connor McDavid, for example, if he's willing, take the vaccine as a show of support and as a show of, hey, this is going to be something that's safe and helpful for people. So that will be something that gets decided by health and governmental officials, whether it be in Canada or the United States. But, you know, we are seeing some politicians do it. And let's face it, we've got to hope that, you know, that the scientists are on the mark on this and it is safe and effective. perspective and we can move past this time we're in right now.
We're talking EJ Raddick, senior reporter for NHL Network and host of the NHL Now here on my Schwartz on Sports podcast here on New York Sports Day, the NHL season to start on January 13th. And EJ, some divisional realignment. It's a 56-game regular season. Everything is going to be in the regular season within your division. So there's going to be an all-Canadian division. That's the plan. And particularly in the East and here in the New York area, a lot of Islanders, Rangers, and Devils against each other eight times each, and that's going to be an interesting nuance to this, you know, this different NHL season that we're going to have, in that every single regular season game is going to be a divisional game.
Yeah, I mean, think of it, Peter, as if we were transported back in time to the early 1960s and we were watching the original six, only we were watching four separate original sixes.
Right.
Those teams played quite often against one another, and that's the way the season unfolded. And in this case, obviously, we've had expansion over the last 60 years, and there's been growth in professional sports, certainly in the NHL, and we're up to 31 teams now. But we will have these four divisions. They will only play within themselves, and it's because they want to limit the travel. And in Canada, the reality is that there's questions about whether or not they can come over the border to begin with. So, and they're still working out the safety and health issues in the different provinces in Canada. So these things are still in the works, as they say. But you know, we will have these small divisions. And as you mentioned, Rangers, for example, I've seen a copy of the preliminary schedule, and it appears that the Rangers and Islanders will play four consecutive games amongst the first six or seven that are played. So I believe the Rangers open with two, maybe the Devils, and one more game, and then they will play four consecutive games against Connor. If my memory serves me correct, and there will be instances of that all throughout the different divisions. I know there's a sequence in there that caught my eye of the Penguins and the Buffalo Sabres playing four consecutive times.
Right.
So this is what you will have, is these ways to kind of mitigate travel, have teams come in and play like a baseball-type schedule in some circumstances where they'll play two or three games in a particular city. So it will be a different look for the players, certainly for the fans as they watch, but that will present different challenges. And you know, when you get to the playoffs, it'll be much like we used to see with the Patrick Division and the Norris Division. The teams will play in division, and you'll have a 1-4, 2-3. The winners will then play, and then once we have four division winners, they will reseed by points, and then we will have semifinals and finals. And that's interesting to me too, Peter, because that means that you're not really playing in a conference-based system anymore.
Right.
You're playing in a circumstance where, you know, the teams that have the highest points amongst those final four will just be reseeded. So you could have from the North play a team from the East, or you could have Toronto and Boston play in a Stanley Cup final if things played out a certain way. So
right,
it's definitely going to be different. I think hockey fans should be happy just to have the opportunity to have games as they were in August and September. And hopefully we will start to push forward, as you mentioned, with the vaccine, and hopefully things will start to get a little more back to normal, and maybe we'll have the ability to have some fans at these games as we move forward. As I mentioned, the Coyotes are planning that
right
to start to have limited attendance, but hopefully it'll be an opportunity as we move forward that they'll be safe enough that we can have at least some attendance in all the different buildings around the league.
Let me get to the three locals because you recently released your power rankings for the different divisions. And in the East, you've got the Islanders ranked number one, and there's obviously a lot of excitement around the Islanders, you know, organization, their fans. You've got a lot of things going on there. They made it to the Eastern Conference Final in the bubble. They're six wins away from winning the Stanley Cup. They've got Ilya Sorokin, the outstanding Russian goalie, coming to join them this season. UBS Arena, their brand new home, is less than a year away from being completed, and they'll play there starting next season. So there's a lot of reasons for Islander fans to be pretty excited about what's going on with that franchise right now.
Yeah, I would agree, and you know, obviously a lot will be determined by how quickly they can get Matt Barzell signed to a new deal and what the term looks like there. As they move forward, I'm sure both the Islanders and Barzell would like to get moving. They would like to have an agreement of some sort as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep an eye out for that. But, you know, I'm going to assume that gets done. And, you know, it's so early in the game, and the team's rosters are not even set right now. There's a number of free agents out there that could be added to different teams' rosters. So when we looked at it, it was just an idea to kind of see, okay, we have these new division alignments. How would it look, at least how does it look at this point in time as we look based on what we know from the recent past? And, you know, the reason that I went with the Islanders atop the division, it's just that I think in a shortened season like this where things are going to come together, you're going to need to have structure. And I think right. that the Islanders have had that structure under Barry Trotz. They have solid goaltending with Varlamov. We're going to expect that Sorokin is going to come in and find his way, much like we saw with Shesterkin with the Rangers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Islanders can only hope that Sorokin plays anywhere near as well as Shesterkin played last year. But they still have Varlamov there. They'll have Pellick and Pulak healthy on the back end. Pellick got hurt at the very end of the playoffs last year. We saw during the regular season last year when he went out, things certainly changed a little right. bit for the Islanders' fortunes. So, you know, they're healthy there. They've got, you know, they've made some changes to their group, a little bit of changes, but really it's very similar mm-hmm. to what they had, you know, when we go back to September when they made a trip to the conference final. And as you mentioned, we're 6 games away from winning a Stanley Cup. So I just think that as we move forward here, there's the structure, as I look at it right now, is something that I have to really consider as valuable. And so that's why I have the Islanders on top. But let's make no mistake, this is going to be very difficult for all these right. teams. You know, the Boston Bruins are good. The Philadelphia Flyers had a good season last year. The Capitals have a new coach in Peter Laviolette. He has a history of doing very well in his first year in a new place. The Rangers are on an upswing. That's a team that's rebuilding, has been accelerated by the additions of some really high-end young draft picks. So, you know, there's, you know, then you have the Pittsburgh Penguins there as well. So those are, you know, a number of good storylines. It won't be easy, but it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out in a shorter season where you're playing each other so much. I think there's going to be a lot of animosity in these games. It will be quite interesting to see, you know, who gets off to a good start and who can build on that.
Is it amazing to you? Because it's amazing to me. And the Islanders have been at this for so long, trying to find a new home. You know, they tried to get, you know, the Coliseum redone years ago. They tried to build a new arena. The referendum got shot down. They've been through this all these years. They moved to Brooklyn. It never was a fit for them at Barclays Center. They come back temporarily at the Coliseum. And now finally next year they're going to have UBS Arena at Belmont Park opening up. And you just see the updates every day and the pictures and what this place is going to look like. I always said I'll believe it when I see it, and we're seeing it in front of our eyes right now. This is going to be an amazing thing for the franchise starting next year.
Yeah, no question about it. And it is really amazing when I think about it that, you know, in the New York tri-state area, there's been a number of sports facilities built in the last 20 years. When you think about what happened in Newark, what's happened in Brooklyn, Yankee Stadium, Citi Field, MetLife Stadium. I mean, it seemed like the Islanders may have missed their window to have a new arena. But
because even the Red Bulls got one before them.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, remember too, Peter, right? We had the economic collapse in 08, and that set things back financially for municipalities and teams that were looking to get involved in building. So it's really the Islanders, I think, and the Islander fans just have to be so thankful that this opportunity has come along for them and to have a building that, as you say, really makes sense for who they are and where their fans are. I agree with you. I remember going to Brooklyn the first time, and, you know, it's a nice arena, but it just never seemed like a fit for the Islanders. Mm-hmm. And for them to be now in, you know, where they're going to be out by Belmont Park, I think it's really a blessing for the franchise. I grew up going to the Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah.
As a kid. I was a big Islander fan. They grew up in Westchester County, which was kind of Ranger country. I ended up as a small boy taken to the Islanders as they came into the league in 72. And they had so much success early in that franchise's history. So there's a little you know, tugs at my heart to see the franchise at least, you know, do well. I've gotten into this business. I'm kind of, I see myself as an honest broker for fans now. Uh-huh. I don't really have a rooting interest anymore, but I am happy to see the fan base that's been so loyal be rewarded with the opportunity to have a brand new building, which gives the franchise long-term roots and a chance to really grow and succeed over the next several decades.
A couple of minutes left with EJ Raddick from NHL Network. You touched on the Rangers before. And obviously they had kind of a, you know, an up and down season, like just about a lot of teams did during the 1920 season. They came on like gangbusters at the end of the season. They were one of the hottest teams in the NHL when the pandemic hit, and then they get to the bubble and they lose to Carolina. But you mentioned this before when you were touching on the other teams in the East. They have some really good young players. They've got Panarin, obviously with Shesterkin in goal. And now, Alexei Lafreniere, the first overall pick in the draft, there's so much excitement about him. Give me your thumbnail sketch on the Rangers, and can they compete for a playoff spot this year?
Well, I think the Rangers will compete for a playoff spot. I the thing I'm curious about is, will some of the guys who had really career-type seasons last year, will they be able to pick up on that, and will they be able to build on that? Will the young defenseman Fox have a really good sophomore season? We've seen sometimes players have to take a step back before they can take another step forward. I think he's a really good player, but, you know, is he going to be a really good rookie year? Is Tony DeAngelo, who was one of a handful of defensemen in the NHL to have over 50 points, is he going to be able to have the same kind of offensive season that he had last season? You know, is Zibanejad, after being injured early in the season, concussion problems, I mean, he had an unbelievable season, well over 40 goals, and, you know, he had 41 goals, actually, but he missed a lot of time, and his goals per game, I believe, was the best in the NHL last year. So is he going to be up to that same level? Panarin, a fantastic season. I don't know how he could do much more than he did last year.
Yep.
You know, Ryan Strome was a good fit with Panarin. Will that continue, that chemistry continue to benefit the Rangers? Where do they fit in Lafreniere? What happens in year two for Kaapo Kakko? I think he's bound to still be a very good player in this league, and it just takes time with 18-year-old kids. Now he's another year older and had a little more time to develop and get ready. So, you know, there's a lot to really be excited about as a Ranger fan. I just don't know in this circumstance where you're in a very tough division with a lot of tough opponents, if this is the time for the Rangers to take that next step. But it's all development for them at this point with these young players, and it'll be really fun to watch. And if you're a Rangers fan, you got to be thrilled, because you have a chance with that group of young players mm-hmm. to be one of the very best teams in the NHL in a short period of time.
And let me close with the Devils, because obviously, you know, they've got some internal excitement as well. You know, they're rebuilding. They've got a new regime. Tom Fitzgerald is the permanent general manager, and a lot of people in the area will remember him from his time playing for the Islanders too. Lindy Ruff is going to be their new head coach, and you know they've got some good young pieces there. EJ with Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier. So, how excited should Devils fans be about the long term future of this team?
Well, I think they should be excited. It's gonna take some time. They've taken some steps forward, and now they've had to kind of reset themselves again. And you know, having to end the year a couple years ago where they made the playoffs, where Taylor Hall had a sensational year. In the end, he ended up being dinged up. He moved on to Arizona, subsequently signing Buffalo. And the Devils have moved on. They've added Jack Hughes to the mix. He had, his first year was okay. I mean, it was some struggles. I think that he would have probably benefited to go the same route that his brother Quinn did, which was to give the extra time in college. But, you know, when you're the first overall pick, it's very rare that you get that kind of runway and you get thrown right into the National Hockey League. And, you know, Jack has just got to get a little bigger and a little stronger. And I think he's one of the guys that really benefits from this extra time that we will have between we would have started a season in October. Now we're starting in January. So I think that Jack is going to be a really good player. I just think it's just a matter of him being a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, having that time to physically mature, I think he's got all the other pieces in place. So, you know, I think Nico Hischier is a really good player. They've made some little additions on defense that I think can help him. They added Ryan Murray from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Got him really for almost nothing. He was a very high draft pick a couple of years ago. He's had some injury issues. He's familiar with Damon Severson. The two played together in junior hockey. So I'll be curious to see, you know, what happens in the Lindy Ruff era for the Devils. But they've got a lot of nice pieces. I like Tom Fitzgerald as the general manager. And I think it's just going to be patience for the Devils now. But I do think that they are on the right track. And we can build a team moving forward with Hughes and Hischier up the middle. I mean, that's pretty darn good.
Hey, EJ, I can't thank you enough for spending some time. It's been way too long since we last spoke. And, you know, I hope things get to the point where I can get to some games this year and you too, and can see in person again. And again, I can't thank you enough for this.
Well, Peter, from your lips to God's ears, I can tell you that. It'd be wonderful to get back to the rinks, and I'm sure the fans feel the same way. So let's hope that things are moving in the right direction in the coming year.
We thank EJ Raddick, and we hope all is well with you and your family, and stay safe. And thanks again for joining me. EJ Raddick, the senior reporter for NHL Network and the host of NHL Now, joining me. I'm Peter Schwartz. This has been Schwartz on Sports here at New York Sports Day. We'll catch you again next time, and stay safe, everyone.